Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Fast 2 Hours in Talk Radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Fukushima irradiated sunny slave island paradise of New Zealand, where it's run by an enormous knob named John Key. He's just such a corrupt scumbag that I can't believe it. I just see the country dissolving like a human body chucked into a vat of fluoridated acid. It's just so disgusting. Not unlike the council chambers. And my very special guest, who has frequented the council chambers many times and has yet to be corrupted and tainted by its extraordinary filth, is Penny Bright. Penny, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinnie.
People think that I exaggerate. I'm sorry, I don't. This is not...
I've told you a million times not to exaggerate.
I the funny thing is, you can exaggerate even and not have the evidence for it, and then people will start digging, and then it'll be even worse as your exaggeration would ever claim.
Yeah, sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, that's for sure, and we're finding a lot of that right now. Yeah.
Mark Twain once said that fiction is really difficult to write because fiction has to make sense, whereas non-fiction is very easy because it doesn't have to.
Well, the reason why I was, just a little bit late getting organised for today's show, I've just sent off an Official Information Act request from hell to New Zealand's Minister of Economic Development, Stephen Joyce. And I'm asking, why are you continuing with the International Convention Centre, the Sky City Money Laundering Bill? Because today, Wednesday the 6th of November, New Zealand Parliament is in session, and the first item up on the order paper is the New Zealand Convention, the International Convention Centre Bill. And this, for people who don't know much about it, was a deal done over the phone and over dinner, basically between the Prime Minister of our country and the top-level people from Sky City. And the concept was that Sky City would build a convention centre, which, of course, is privately owned and they make the money out of. And what would happen is that they would get a deal, they would get more pokie machines, etc., and they've been trying to minimise the effect. The only thing that people are talking about is the effect on problem gamblers. But
I think this really funny is because it seems as though our Prime Minister is a problem gambler, and if anybody would know about gambling, it'd be him, considering he was a derivatives trader, which the New York State Legislature tried to get involved to regulate when derivatives were first postulated after the removal of the Glass-Steagall Act.
Well, that's exactly right, and at that pivotal point in time, November 1999, when the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed under President Clinton. For people who don't know the Glass-Steagall Act from their elbow, what it was an act, I think it was back to 1933, and it sort of put a giant concrete wall in between boring, safe commercial banking and risky, dangerous investment banking. And there'd been huge pressure and lobbying from the banksters and their mates and they'd been chipping away at this concrete wall. And what happened was in November 1999, the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed, the effect of which was to make the market for derivatives completely without regulation. Well, we all know how that worked out, which was that's the reason for the global financial meltdown. But at that particular point in time, November 1999, where was now New Zealand Prime Minister John Key? He was on the New York Federal Reserve, and he was the head of derivatives for Merrill Lynch. So what role did he play in the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act? And that people that think he knows what he's doing, I beg to differ.
They're correct. He knows exactly what he's doing in a criminal way.
Well, the thing is that, who is benefiting? And thank you, Vinnie. I did end up reading your book, An Economic Hitman. And, my considered opinion, that's exactly what John Key is. He's an economic hitman. He's working on behalf of
That's what John Perkins said. I told John Perkins who John Key was and what his background is, and the author of the book himself says, yep, he's an economic hitman.
Well, that's that's the thing. I mean, is John Key, who's been the most spin-doctored prime minister that I've been aware of, you know, they try to make him sort of ordinary, you know, folksy, blokesy sort of guy, when in actual fact, he's basically a Wall Street bankster from the highest levels. He's still a shareholder in the Bank of America, which would be illegal in any countries like Australia, which actually pay a bit more attention to anti-corrupt practices. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's a really big deal. Whose interest is he working in for? Mum and Dad New Zealanders or overseas investors and banksters? Not very complicated, really.
And I don't think the new leader of the opposition would wind up being any different, either Harvard-educated, lives in Herne Bay as opposed to his electorate, just the same as John Key, lives in Parnell instead of Helensville. There's the same guy.
Well, the thing is that my firm belief is where the people lead, the politicians will follow, and you cannot rely on the unreliable. And so if you really want meaningful change, it is the public that have got to come forward with a very, very clear demands and make a hell of a fuss about it and take what action they can to force the politicians to do what we want, because they won't do it voluntarily. Anyway,
they never tend to. It's only once you hold their feet to the fire. And this is why I admire you above pretty much all other activists in New Zealand, is that you keep sticking to your guns and sticking the knife in their ribs when they're not looking and throwing a spanner in the works. And you're just relentless. You're like this. Like, Penny is like the embodiment of the mosquito factor. You know how everybody says one person can't make a difference or anything like that? Lock yourself in a room with a mosquito, see how that works out for you.
Well, the thing is that what I've learned in life as an activist, and it took me a long time to work this one out, but it's not the breadth of the stand that makes the difference. I mean, you can have hundreds of thousands of people who sign a petition and they wipe their backsides with it, but when you get one person who refuses to pay their rates, or you take action which cannot be ignored, and you don't need a cast of thousands, and so it's not the breadth of the action, it's the depth, in my view. And I'd like to give full credit to my fellow politically savvy, stroppy woman mate, Jax Taylor. She and I, we put the had a new banner up outside TVNZ yesterday, Television New Zealand, just over the road from Sky City, so we had that as the backdrop, and the new banner had pictures of John Key, Minister of Economic Development Stephen Joyce, and Auckland Mayor Len Brown, and the wording on this bright fluoro yellow banner in big black writing was, "Friends of Sky City, money launderers and organised criminals? ? And then people can find more details on my website, so I put that up there as well. www.pennybright4mayor.org.nz, and you can see some dynamite information up there. And I'd just like to go through that with people, because honestly, as you would say, but I'll say it more politely, you couldn't make this stuff up. Okay, so
let's go through it, Penny. I mean, I'm just dying, salivating, chomping at the bit. But just before we do, did you see the picture I released of John Key on Facebook this morning?
A very quick look, yes. Well, I really think that this government is so vulnerable on issues of white collar crime, corruption, and corporate welfare. And those of us who, as you say, have been quite unrelenting in exposing the facts and evidence which proves just how vulnerable they are on this, we are getting such traction. And, I mean, just the recent Auckland mayoral campaign, where I got fourth with 11,723 votes, we'll compare that with less than 2 years ago, in November 2011, when I stood against now the defendant, John Banks in Epsom, and got 128 votes. People are getting up. That's quite a big jump.
Yeah. Can we actually see a shift in support for this person? Because I don't know about you, but my approach is to tell the truth about John Key as often as possible and as loud as possible and hang him with the truth.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, let's, just get the facts out to people and let them work it out for themselves, because there is so much spin out there. But, people are, in my view, really starting to get it. So there's a very clear action plan up on my website there against white-collar crime, corruption and corporate welfare. And if people have a look, these issues are generic. They are internationally relevant. It's only one page, but it gives a framework for genuine transparency. And this is how you need to clip the wings of the 1% by having clear demands and legislative change, which, makes it harder for them to do what they want, which is looking after themselves and trampling over us.
Mm. Indeed. There's a substantial quantity of trampling happening all the time, in fact. You've heard of this rushing things through under urgency? And in fact, I can barely recall a single bill that hasn't been rushed through urgency.
Well, as far as democracy is concerned, rushing to judgment on things, same with courts, rushing to judgment, especially when you haven't done your homework, is absolutely outrageous. And what gets me with this International Convention Centre bill is that it's at the committee stage in Parliament today, and so it is going through. But, it seems to me that, like me and Jax, we're the only ones who've been making a fuss about the increased risk of money laundering, because it's not exactly rocket science to know that casinos are a major source of money laundering, and how one of the ways that they do it, it's called TITO, T-I-T-O, ticket in, ticket out technology. So you take your dirty drug money, you take it to one of these machines in the casino, and you get a ticket. You put your ticket back in the machine, and you get clean money the other side. Well, good grief. If we are setting up, if there is going to be effectively a money laundering factory set up in the heart of Auckland, wouldn't you think that would raise the risk of more organised crime and more organised criminals if there's somewhere where they can really neatly go and turn their dirty money into clean money? Wouldn't you think?
Well, I think John Banks could have benefited from such a practice. He wouldn't be in the mess he's in now.
But the thing is, let me go through this with you, okay? I did this official information request from HEL to OFCANS. Now, who are they? OFCANS, that's the acronym for Organised and Financial Crime Agency New Zealand. Now, OFCANS are supposed to be the lead agency who are fighting against money laundering in New Zealand, okay? So wouldn't you expect them to know something about it? So on the 13th of August, I got a reply. Thank you for your email request that includes the following. I requested copies of any information OFCANS has provided for the New Zealand International Convention Centre bill or any other related regulatory impact report or statement or to Cabinet regarding the increased risk of money laundering. And this was the reply. OFCANS has not supplied any information on this issue, nor do we hold such information. The request is therefore refused on the basis that the information requested is not held by OFCANS pursuant to Section 18G of the Official Information Act 1982. Good grief. It gets worse. Then I requested information which confirms that the view of OFCANS on the increased risk of money laundering was sought by any of the following parties: the Department of Internal Affairs, the Ministry of Economic Development, Sky City, the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet, the Office of the Prime Minister, Cabinet, any Cabinet Minister, in particular Stephen Joyce. And the answer was, OFCANS did not receive any request from the above. The request is therefore refused on the basis, blah, 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 that they don't hold any information. So not only did the parties who should have known that OFCANS were the ones that you went to do due diligence on money laundering, they didn't ask OFCANS, but by the same token, OFCANS didn't say, yoo-hoo, remember us, we do money laundering, anything you'd like to ask us? You can't. How is that anything but unbelievable. And it gets even worse. Sit down, calm yourselves, people. Okay, I'm also interested in any information held by Ofcans on how Tito tickets in, tickets out can be used for money laundering at casinos. Are you seated? Answer. Ofcans hold no information on this matter. The request is therefore refused, blah, blah, blee, blee. Hello? Tito, tickets in, tickets out is the major mechanism for money laundering and Ofcans hold no information about it. Last but not least, I requested all or any information held by Ofcans which raises concerns about the potential increase in organised crime as a result of potentially increased money laundering opportunities through the proposed New Zealand International Convention Centre bill. Ofcans holds no information on this matter.
That's an unbelievable thing. So let me get this straight. It's the what's their job? To organise financial crimes or organise money laundering? Is that the name of their organisation? We organise money laundering and serious fraud and crime in this country? Because that seems to be what they're doing. We'll be right back after the break. This is thenewsshow.com. Penny Boyd is my guest. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As Jimi Hendrix would say, there must be some kind of way out of here. And as I would say, said John Key to the truth. He's always trying to wriggle out of the truth, isn't he? But we know who you are, Mr. Key. We know what you are. Don't freaking try and BS us, man. We're on to you. We're exposing you. All day, every day. Like a monkey on your back, like a pimple that you can't reach. That's right. We'll be right here, just ready to pop. And my very special guest, who's going to lance the boil of John Key, is Penny Pryde.
Ah, oh, just heating up the needle with a live flame. No. Anyway, what we were talking about before the break was the role of Ofcans, the New Zealand Organised Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, and on their website it states, Ofcans will combat organised crime through, quote, leading, coordinating, or contributing to policy or legislative changes to make it harder for organised criminals to operate. There were opportunities.
How's the government going to work then?
There will be opportunities to do so by, for example, making it harder to launder money or obtain false identities or by increasing information sharing. Good grief. So, in actual fact, they've done the complete opposite. Because we have a legislative change happening right now with the International Convention Centre bill, which gives increased opportunity for money laundering by Sky City or at Sky City, and Ofcans are doing big, fat, diddly squat, and they've admitted it. So, give me a break. But what else you need to know about this one is that on the 24th of October this year, I sent an open letter, official information at request to New Zealand Prime Minister John Key, and have asked directly, why have you not ensured that due diligence was carried out over the increased risk of money laundering with the International Convention Centre Sky City Bill, dear Prime Minister? As an anti-corruption campaigner and a 2013 Auckland mayoral candidate, I am deeply concerned at the apparent lack of due diligence by yourself, as Prime Minister of New Zealand, perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, regarding the increased risk of money laundering arising from the International Convention Centre Sky City deal bill. Please provide all information which confirms why you failed to do due diligence and consult the lead agency, Ofcans, who has the responsibility for making it harder to launder money. And then I sent him a copy of the official information at request I'd sent to Ofcans, plus their reply, and I've had acknowledgement that they've received this Official Information Act request. Yes, but I haven't yet had the response. Let me guess.
You'll wind up getting a response after the legislation's passed.
Well, what concerns me is that, they certainly are pushing ahead with this legislation, because what happened was I went through the parliamentary process of making submissions on this International Convention Centre bill, and I wanted that Ofcan's reply so I could make it available, but I didn't get it in time for my submission. So I have since sent out to all MPs copies of the Ofcan's reply. And what really concerns me as well, Vinny, is there is not one political party that I know of so far in the House, opposition, that have actually picked up this money laundering question. They talk about problem gamblers, and here's the hoot. Sky City apparently are going to be using increased technology which enables facial recognition of problem gamblers while they give complete anonymity to money launderers and organised criminals. How does that work?
So they face scan the money launderers and go, he checks out. And then they face
no, they don't.
And then they face scan the money launderers and go, wait, no, this guy's going to spend all his money here. No, well, let's turn him away.
Yeah, well, it's in terms of the contradictions. Like yesterday, the telecommunications interception communications security bill, TICS bill, went through Parliament. And so on the one hand, what you've got with this New Zealand government is, and they're not the only ones, is the increased violation of ordinary people's rights to privacy, and yet you've got they're completely ignoring and giving the green light to money launderers and organised criminals. Where's the accountability? Where's the surveillance of them? Where's the attempt to stop those who can really help stuff up our society? Because, I mean, wouldn't you think if the drug dealers can go to the money laundering factory Sky City to clean up their dirty money, how's that not going to mean we're going to have more drug dealing, more problems with youth and all the rest of it, when at the top that they're just running rampant? How's that work?
Mm. Well, I imagine it works quite well for some people.
Well, I mean, there's more, all right? So I've just had a go at today at the Minister, Stephen Joyce, Mr Fix-It for money launderers and organised criminals, because that's how it looks to me. I've had a go at John Key. But what happened was I did an Official Information Act request to Auckland Council, because back on the 27th of June is when the Auckland Council had their governing body meeting, and what they were voting on was a submission to go into government on this International Convention Centre bill. And did the council actually support the idea of a new convention centre in relation to more pokey machines? And at that meeting, Mayor Len Brown spoke strongly and passionately, basically in favour of Sky City. But the vote was lost 10 votes to 7, so the majority of Auckland councillors didn't support it. But Len Brown, Mayor, was very much in favour of Sky City, and hold that thought and I'll come back to it. But then the digging that I did was, hang on a minute, I had checked, did my homework, and found out that, again, no reference whatsoever to the increased risk of money laundering as spelled out in the regulatory impact statement. Which says the potential risk of money laundering, and says cash-intensive industries such as casinos are attractive to money laundering activity. New Zealand's National Risk Assessment 2010 assessed casinos as presenting moderate to high risk of money laundering. For this reason, casinos, including all Sky City casinos, are subject to the Anti-Money Laundering and Countering Financing of Terrorism Act 2009, which comes into force on the 30th of June 2013. So, what they do is they go into a bit more detail there, and state, for example, the anonymity that can be associated with TITO, that tickets and tickets out technology, has the potential to facilitate money laundering by increasing the potential for currency refining and ticket structuring. In effect, this means that low-denomination notes could be fed into one or more gaming machine or kiosks and then be redeemed by ticket into high-denomination notes or casino checks. Increasing the use of TITO technology and raising the denominations that can be fed into a machine may therefore increase the potential for money laundering. Remember, Ofcans, whose job is trying to stop money laundering, has no information about TITO, tickets in, tickets out technology. Ugh, unbelievable.
Yeah, well, actually, it's totally believable, especially if you're incredibly cynical, like me.
Well, I guess so. But anyway, with my digging with Auckland Council, I did an Official Information Act request from HEL and got a response, and the essence of the response from Auckland Council was that staff had read the regulatory impact statement, but they thought basically it was someone else's job to do that. Well, we've just found out the ones who are supposed to do that, Ofcans, didn't. So here you have Auckland Council, in whose patch lives Sky City, and they've done no due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering either. And it gets even more exciting. On Monday, the 11th of November, at 12 noon, myself and fellow community activist Lisa Prager, we have a meeting with the Auckland District Commander, Superintendent Mike Clement. And the reason why we're having a meeting with the Auckland District Commander, the top cop in Auckland, is because I did an Official Information Act request to him as well, asking about the due diligence about money laundering. Because wouldn't you think Auckland Central Police, on whose patch is basically going to be this giant money laundering factory, don't you think that they, A, should have been consulted, or B, should have put their hand up? And I haven't yet had an Official Information Act reply, but Superintendent Mike Clements is very happy to talk to both myself and Lisa Prager, and this will be a sort of a brainstorming open discussion, and we will be going ballistic. Because wouldn't you think that, as I say again, that the safety, the health and safety of the majority of citizens of Auckland in the Auckland region, how are they best served by having a big fat money laundering factory right in the heart of Auckland City? How's that work? And it is my concern. And I was the fourth polling Auckland mayoral candidate. And I am not dropping the ball. In fact, I've got the ball tucked under my arm and I'm racing towards the try line, actually. And I think it's looking very good because people are starting to get it. And if we didn't have the opportunity of people like yourself, Vinny, I mean, the mainstream media just seems to be there's a huge, great big wet blanket over this, but eventually, when the genie starts getting out of the bottle, you know what I mean? It can't be contained. But that's why we need people like you and your show. And I'm so sorry about the death of Vapi Kupinga, because on Radio Wātea she used to give a wonderful opportunity for people to have a really good go on her show. But these, we've got to make the best of what we got and get that word out.
Yeah. I was just thinking about my auntie Vapi the other day. I mean, she's not really my auntie, but like when I was first starting out, like before I had my radio show and was just kind of like an activist on the street with the camera, you know, from back in the day, Penny. She kind of like bought me coffees at Circus Circus in Mount Eden. And Max Egan from Australia, he's kind of like the Vinnie Eastwood of Australia, I guess. He flew in and went and go picked him out of the airport, went and had a coffee at Circus Circus, and just reminded me of all these times Vapi had, like, you know, spent money on me, you know, bought me food and stuff because I was broke as a motherfucker, and she used to give me her son's hand-me-downs, I think some of which I'm kind of wearing right now, but, you know. So it really sucks when she brought me on radio for the first time, you know, sat in the studio at Wātea and co-hosted with her and that kind of thing. We go out afterwards and have some fun, you know.
Yeah.
And
well, the thing
it's
is
a shame
that
I didn't get to go to her funeral.
It's just how unbelievable is that? I mean, you know, John Duncan, who did such a marvellous job filming stuff, because, I mean, moments, if not captured in history, can be lost forever. and probably the most well-known bit of filming that John took of me asking Prime Minister John Key to his face at a Grey Power meeting whether he was personally profiting from New Zealand's growing indebtedness because he was a shareholder in the Bank of America. John filmed it, you turned it into a YouTube clip, and it has had some thousands of hits. But if John had not been there to film it, that would have been the end of that.
That's precisely right, and I do also comprehend that being there to film or just record audio in some cases can be sufficient to, if something really good happens, you know, it can go viral, and as long as it's nice and short and what have you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, well, the thing was that and John Duncan and Vuppy, you know, they were acquaintances, and it just so happens that their funerals ended up being on exactly the same time, you know, day, and you can't be in two places at once, so, you know, and it's a real shame, but Radio Wātea rang me, and I gave a commemoration to Vuppy. But what occurred to me as I was saying, because often when you say stuff, it sort of, you know, it wakes up your mind. It's like, oh, my God, you know, Vuppy's going to leave a really big hole there because you can't buy that knowledge and experience and track record. And then I thought, oh, my God, I suppose arguably that could be said for me as well. It's like we need to bring the young ones up to speed so they don't have to sort of spend 50 years working out to be effective, like as an activist, do issue-by-issue politics. I mean, that's my big lesson for people. It took me 50 years. Well, you know, hopefully I can get to younger ones, so they don't have to spend all that time learning this really powerful truth, you know? That's it. I mean, you and I don't agree on everything, Vinny, but that's cool. We can have a civilised debate or we can park it. But to maximise unity, if everybody needs to agree with everything, you've got three people. Well, that ain't effective.
Yeah, it's quite divisive, actually. I mean, yeah. I think you just come together against the common enemy. You know, that's what I think. That's what the American revolutionaries did. They figured the common enemy was King George, with his scumbaggery and his taxation without representation. And most of the founding fathers, as I hear it, freaking hated each other.
Well, yeah, quite likely. But that is the thing that I mean. What was really interesting was,
Sorry, Penny. Actually, continue. We've got another 30 seconds. My bad.
Okay. But like on the Merrill campaign was on an issue-by-issue basis. Well, Stephen Berry, for example, from the Libertarians, I mean, normally we'd be on different galaxies on most issues. But, I mean, I think I prefer an honest right-winger to a phony so-called lefty.
I think you're right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Penny Bright. Coming to us live from Auckland, the Water Pressure Group. Waterpressure.wordpress.com is her website. Back in a minute, folks.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. But I can't do this all. Superman.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, New Zealand's only dedicated five-day-a-week talk radio show where you actually get to hear the truth that mainstream media will never, ever let you hear to the fullest extent possible. Not in a 30-second freaking soundbite coverage. God, mainstream media frustrates me. Penny, I was watching Channel 3 on Sunday morning.
All right,
The Nation, right? You know, the equivalent of Q&A that's on Channel 1. And you know what they were doing for the entire episode of The Nation? It was Michael Mora, who's like the Saturday night newsreader, reading a script and then introducing clips from other news agencies overseas. The whole show.
Yeah, Well, the thing that gets me is just this concept that New Zealand is the least corrupt country in the world, and I believe that we're probably one of the most corrupt countries in the world, to be honest, which is why, at the end of this month, it's my intention to go over to the Australian Public Sector Anti-Corruption Conference, which is being held in Sydney. I've got my accommodation sorted. I hopefully will have my airfare, have that sorted out tomorrow, and then I just have to raise $2,000 registration fee, and I hope people will help with that. It's just a little bit, you know, like a, yeah, I mean, that's 100 people giving $20. I mean, hello, how hard's that? Because if everyone, you'd be the same, who said, oh, you do wonderful work, we really like your work, sort of put a little bit of money where their mouth was, we'd probably be millionaires, Vinnie. But that's not why we do it.
Well, I think if we were doing it for the money, it would be probably one of the worst business decisions of all time.
Exactly.
Almost a worse business decision than repealing the Glass-Steagall Act.
Yes, indeed. I'd just like to make that point that lessons for activists, seriously, I think a lot of people, they get hung up in the process, like, oh, we got, you know, it's a number of people we get marching down the street, when what I'm looking is outcomes. Okay, you got 5,000 people marching down the street. What were you marching down the street for, and what did you get out of it? What did you achieve? Whereas, I mean, I know that, you know what I'm saying?
You know what I'm going to do, Penny? I'm going to get on the megaphone at the next protest and say, is anybody going to join me in my little scheme of marching up and down the square?
Yeah, good on you, Vinny. and this concept that some people get really hung up that, it's so individualistic of a couple of people organise something, because you haven't had a great big meeting organising it, you haven't sort of put the call out to thousands of people, that therefore you're only doing it, somehow you're just doing it for yourself because there's only a couple of you. And I'd like to give full credit to my friend Jax. If it hadn't been for me and Jax, when US Secretary of Defence Panata came over here, such a blur whenever he came out, we were the only ones that protested. We had four banners out there, and we were the only ones who picked up the ball and did anything on that. And then against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, the day after day, it was just me and Jax mainly with, you know, two women, 10 banners, five back-to-back, right outside Sky City Convention Centre where the negotiations were taking place. And, thousands of people got to see the signs, but if we had not done that, if we hadn't seized the moment, nobody would have done it. So, you know, hell with these people with their silly ideas about, how to... It comes down to two words, and that's my good friend Sue Henry, and she said, right, whatever you do in life, two words, be effective. Be effective. And sometimes different tactics are more effective depending on the time, place and circumstance, but that's what it boils down to, be effective. But what I have learnt is the power of letting your banners do the talking. Hugely powerful. Again, people have got something to look at, but if you've got a leaflet to give out like we did yesterday, there will be ripples from that. Because when you start throwing boulders into the pond, ripples go where you don't see. And I tell you, that's a fact. You know, I know when I send stuff out by email, I know how it works because, at 30,000 feet, someone will say to the Prime Minister's office, did you know, that we received this? Are you aware of this? When I pot him for not doing due diligence on Sky City, and I send that out to over 500 Aussie media and to Transparency International branches around the world, sure as hell, somebody will get back in touch. They will. That's it. So, yeah, like I say, it's about
The answer is ultimately just to not do nothing in the first place. And secondly, make sure the thing that you're doing is targeted, right?
Yeah.
I mean, going out with a banner in the middle of the in the middle of Saturday or whatever when there's bugger all people round, it's a stupid idea. What if you're doing it on a weekday around about 4 till 5:30 in the afternoon when the most massive amount of traffic is going to be surging past you, you know? And this is something I've noticed about your style as well, Penny, is there's very specific times where you get optimal kind of coverage. And, you know, well, it's not rocket science, people. Yeah, well, it's just it's
being effective, you're trying to hit a number of different birds with the same stone. I mean, like, if the moment is recorded, because with any event, you organise something, you get three bites at the cherry, okay? Beforehand, you can put out pre-publicity, letting people know why you're doing what you're doing, alert them to it, and then send that far and wide. Then you have the event. And if it's captured by film, video, audio, whatever, then that gives you a chance to get that out. And then there's the after bit where you take whatever records you have from the day and send them far and wide. So even if it's just a little action, you can potentially, you can get just thousands and thousands of people. But the importance that I can't stress enough is the importance of focus and timing. And the other, I've said this before, but I think people, it's good to consider a triangle, that with anything you're involved in, think of a triangle where you broaden the base and you narrow the target, but the apex of that triangle, what do you want? What do you want? Why are you marching down the street? You know, what is the issue? What do you want? So you can be very clear with people, because I know, I've been on protest march where it's all been fluffy and blurry, and sort of why are people doing what they're doing? You're not very sure. Well, that's not my way. I think you need to be extremely focused, extremely targeted. And the other thing is, by doing that, you can also help to split and divide others. Because if you work on an issue by issue basis, people who might, you know, politically, well, you might be deadly and sworn enemies on some issues, but, you know, even a stop clock's right twice a day. So it may be that you're on the same page on that issue at that time. Well, why turn that person into an enemy on that issue when they're your friend? How dumb is that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my perspective is, unless somebody's like a full-on lying psychopath,
yeah.
I'll be fully open to being allies with them on whatever issue, because I know that they're not going to like stab me and leave me in the dark kind of thing. Even if they disagree with me or don't like me or something, they're not going to like wind up doing that kind of thing.
Well, hopefully not me. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying, but anyway, we'll back to the Sky City stuff. Is that people in New Zealand, because you can hardly miss it, know that after the Auckland mayoral elections, we've just been embroiled in this ongoing scandal where Mayor Len Brown was outed for having an extramarital affair for over 2 years. And initially, well, my view on that was that consenting adults make their own rules. And if your rules are based on monogamy and mutual exclusivity, if you breach that trust, there will be repercussions, and often they can involve innocent third parties like families, etc. However, when you're in public office, you are in a goldfish bowl where people can look in and see. And so the line that demarcates your rights to privacy as an individual and the public's right to transparency, because you're in public office, they get blurred. And the common sense test is, how would it look on the front page of the national newspaper? How would it look? And I think that Len Brown and others are finding it doesn't look too good. Are we going to have a break? Are we going to have a break?
Len Brown might have been too busy dipping his nuggets in some sweet and sour sauce.
Anyway, but the point is this, that so originally, I mean, that was my view, because the fact of the matter is, I do believe there should be enforceable codes of conduct so that we get some clearer guidelines. Okay, you lot, you're in public office. Now, you do need to behave yourselves, and you know, here are the guidelines. And if you, and there are consequences. If you're going to do stuff that breaches this code of conduct, then there will be consequences. So you need to think about it. But the problem is in New Zealand that local government politicians don't have an enforceable code of conduct.
Well, you know what they say. If you don't keep an eye on the scumbags, they're going to wind up perpetrating even more scumbaggery than you could ever conceive of by yourself. Scumbaggery that you'd never even dream of. You know why you'd never dream of committing such scumbaggery, ladies and gentlemen, is because you're not actually a ruthless criminal scumbag who wants to sell the country out. But the politicians you elect to represent you actually are. All right? Believe it. We've got the evidence to prove it. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Second hour with Penny Bright coming right up. Gathering dust particles, funneling through smokestacks,
airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too bad. Check the labels. Oh, good, Vinny. But, yeah. I'll just...
Everyone's asleep.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. I'm so excited and happy today because I get to talk to my good friend and fellow scumbaggery exposer, Penny Bright, who has credibility up to wazoo. Unlike myself, I'm not very credible at all. In fact, I would be closer towards the incredible spectrum. Now, Penny... When we talk about exposing scumbaggery, the one thing that always occurs to me is that people get really depressed when the scumbags in question don't get exposed right away, you know? It should be just like a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you know, like prostitution, for example. The pressure, the press, the media, in my opinion, should prostitize themselves in the favour of truth. But instead, they tend to prostitise themselves in order to cover it up. And that's the extraordinary problem. If we had a working media, and trust me, these media people don't do any work. They don't do any research. They're lazy as frack, and they're airheads. That's the words of Ian Wishart himself, who was like the Walter Cronkite of New Zealand at one point. He says all the journalists are just their heads. No wonder they ain't figuring nothing out. No wonder they ain't reporting the truth. And no wonder why the ones that do get a very big talking to from the producers that work probably for the CIA or something. You know, it's just so well stitched up. This is why the media is no longer relevant to a large extent. Not to say that they never report the truth, because that would be a lie. All right? But... how truthful is it when you report John Key saying something that they know to be a lie and just report that he said it, rather than saying he said this and it's a lie? Mm. Penny, what do you make of the situation?
Well, I've been doing media stuff since about 1997, and this is what I learned. Okay, corporate media, you can't control them. You can't, well, you can try telling them what to do, but that's just get you offside. Anything that you get that's positive is a bonus, but if you sort of treat them as the enemy, I personally don't find that to be particularly productive. It doesn't mean to say that you should put up with any lies or crap, but by the same token, I know myself that I've actually had success in helping to get some of the issues out there with mainstream media, and I know internationally as well, when it comes to helping to expose corruption, like in Australia, when they had the huge publicity associated in the late 80s, exposing the police corruption. That's what helped to get the legislation which set up the Independent Commission Against Corruption. But if there haven't
which
been...
Which was incidentally staffed completely by police and prevent any investigations into New Zealand police corruption.
Well, the thing is that it's the fuss factor, and mainstream media can help in that. But and I think it's, I mean, I know that I've worked with some key mainstream media journos who have been helpful, not necessarily on every issue, but, yeah, like I say, anything you get that's positive is a bonus, and that's how I've treated it, and it works for me. But it's because they are corporate media, and that's why you've got to be a little bit realistic in terms of the Fourth Estate and them, you know, having a separate role. I mean, that's a fine idea, it's a fine principle. But in terms of who owns them and who pulls the strings, I mean, we have to have a little bit of a reality check there. But anyway, back to the this Len Brown pants down thing. Like I say, originally back on the 17th of October, and this was fairly soon after it all broke in the press, what I said that there was a difference in my opinion between morality and legality. And should Len Brown stand down as Auckland mayor because of his two-year extramarital affair, which has come as quite a shock to a large number of people, including myself. And I said, as it currently stands legally, in my opinion, provided there's been no misuse of public monies to finance in any way this unfortunate affair, then my answer is no. And then what I did, I quoted at length from the Auckland Code of Conduct, which I said, in my considered opinion, is a gutless creature with no statutory teeth for proven misconduct, because the key principles are supposed to involve honesty and integrity, public interest. They're supposed to declare their private interest. They're supposed to be impartial. They're supposed to be accountable and open and treat people with respect. They've got a duty to uphold the law. They're supposed to exercise prudent stewardship over resources. And when
in a satanic sense of the word, what you do is you just take whatever's right side up and turn it upside down. The direct opposite of everything that you just listed there is precisely the behaviour these scumbaggery individuals in government and other corporations and so on and so forth.
The problem we've got here is that a breach of this code of conduct is not an offence under the Local Government Act. So what is the point in having all these fine ideals if it's a toothless wonder? And it says in the code of conduct, to avoid doubt, a breach of the code of conduct does not constitute an offence under the Local Government Act 2002. The exact nature of the action the governing body, local board, may take depends on the nature of the breach and whether there are statutory provisions dealing with the breach. But in itself, a breach of the code of conduct is not an offence under the Act. So, but get a load of this. So the code of conduct for elected representatives at local government level may be effectively useless, but at least they've got one, because our central government MPs don't even have a code of conduct. And how, I mean, good God, they make the laws for other people, which include other people having to have codes of conduct. They don't have one themselves. But we're the least corrupt country in the world. Good God. Like I say, you can't make this stuff up. Anyway, so what was handy for me, I was able to quote from the, you know, the action plan against white-collar crime, corruption and corporate welfare. Section 4 of my list of demands is that we need to legislate for an enforceable code of conduct for New Zealand members of Parliament who make the rules for everybody else. And 5, to make it an offence under the Local Government Act 2002 for New Zealand local government elected representatives to breach their code of conduct. And there are examples of codes of conduct that do have sharp, serrated teeth just over the ditch in Australia. You know, there's working examples internationally of you know, where we can go for best practice. So it's, you know, my argument was trying to turn a bad thing into a good thing, but that was before I found out that apparently Len Brown had been using hotel rooms at Sky City for his illicit sexual relations, which throws a whole different spanner in the works and raises it to a level which I believe involves effectively, it comes into the more into the bribery and corruption side of things. because with Len Brown, what people need to remember is that back in 2010, Sky City gave him $15,000 towards his election campaign. Len Brown declared it. John Banks got $15,000 from Sky City. He didn't declare it. And on the 27th of June, Len Brown voted in favour of Sky City in terms of the International Convention Centre bill. But if he's actually been using the rooms, and I don't care whether he's paid or not, the fact is if you've been using your hotel room for illicit bonking, then someone sure as hell knows about it at Sky City. And that means you're potentially beholden and you are susceptible to blackmail. How dumb. It's not just dumb, but I think it's a form of corrupt practice. And that, which is why my opinion is that Len Brown should stand down. And I also want to see the Serious Fraud Office do an investigation into this side of it, because remember, Auckland Council never did any due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering at Sky City. That's on Len Brown's patch in his time. Not okay.
Have you got a hypothesis, like a working theory? You don't have the evidence for it, but what you think Len Brown has done and might be guilty of?
What I think is this, and which is why I stood against him as a mayor, because I believe that the people that really run the Auckland region are the Committee for Auckland, which hardly anybody had heard of until I actually managed to include that into my 150 candidate statement, word candidate statement, which went out to 1.4 million voters, when I said, you want to know who really runs Auckland? Try Googling. Dub-dub-dub. committeeforauckland.co.nz membership. And I know a lot of people did, and they went, oh, my God, we had no idea. Because who are the Committee for Auckland? They are like the New Zealand Business Roundtable, ex-New Zealand Business Roundtable on steroids. They are not just CEOs of major companies. They are CEOs of district health boards, CEOs of tertiary institutions, CEOs of corporate charity and also corporate Māori. And they are unelected, invitation only, $10,000 a year membership. And in terms of the structure of Auckland Council, the CEO of Auckland Council, Doug Mackay, is a member. Now, he's supposed to be an apolitical public servant. And the big issue to me is how many contracts for services provided by Auckland Council and Auckland Council-controlled organisations are going to member companies of the Committee for Auckland. But because Doug Mackay is not doing his job in a lawful way, the books aren't open and we don't know exactly who are getting these contracts. But the rates keep going up. And not only that, it has been Doug Mackay who's responsible for the inquiry into Len Brown. Now, because Len Brown's been doing such a marvellous job for the Committee for Auckland, and so has Deputy Mayor Penny Holth, who was personally endorsed back in 2010 by Sir Ron Carter, who was at that time the chair of the Committee for Auckland. So beware the smiley faces, beware the veneer of community advocacy, and watch for who's really doing what for whom. Because the Committee for Auckland are very happy with Len Brown and Penny Holth, and why would they want them shifted? So why on earth has all this scandal broken loose? In my opinion, it's got quite out of hand because the election was actually quite phony. It wasn't left versus right. It never has been for the last 30 years. It's the corporate minority versus the public majority. And this John Polino, this American restaurateur who's never been to a single council meeting in his life, he wasn't really a credible candidate, but it was sort of like he was the pretendy right candidate against left Len Brown, when it's not that left versus right thing anymore. So it was just to maintain the myth and the fraud that it is left versus right, because John Polino's campaign manager was John Slater, who was an ex-president of the New Zealand National Party. So that helped to give it that veneer of so-called right-wing respectability. And, John Polino, he got over 100,000 votes. Unbelievable, really. But the thing is that the committee for Auckland, who really run the place, they must be horrified. And so, of course, yeah, let's put it in the safe pair of hands that the CEO of Auckland Council, the member of the Committee for Auckland, Doug Mackay, he has handed the investigation to Ernst & Young, who just so happened to be, they're a company that's a member of the Committee for Auckland. Nigel Morrison, the CEO of Sky City, is a member of the Committee for Auckland. And when I get speaking rights tomorrow at the Auckland Council meeting, I'm going to bring up to Len Brown, to his face, this major conflict of interest and why I believe the Serious Fraud Office need to do an investigation.
What time and date is that going to be happening, Penny?
Tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Auckland Town Hall, Thursday.
10 o'clock in the morning?
10 o'clock in the morning, that's when the council... Well, what happens is...
Hey, hold on a second. Why the hell are the council meetings being held like during the day when people who have to work can't come into the council meetings?
Well, I mean, they used to have them
at night on like Thursday nights or something like that, huh?
Well, that's true. It used to be more user-friendly, but that's the whole thing. I mean, the fact that the Auckland region's being run like a business, by business, for business, all they want from the public is just shut up, pay your rates, be a giant cash cow, all pay, no say. Well, we continue to give the contracts to our corporate mates. I mean, it's as simple as that. And property developers. Don't forget the property developers with this daft, lunatic plan, the draft unitary plan, which is planning to, yeah, for all this growth to come to Auckland when so many of the public are opposed to that because the New Zealand Property Council, they are... Their head guy is a member of the Committee for Auckland, and they're totally intertwined. So, you know, it's big business of property developers. They're the ones who are really running Auckland. They love Len Brown and Penny Holes. So this so-called inquiry into Len Brown's conduct has got the red flashing disco lights, cover up, cover up, cover up, which you can see from 30,000 miles away, which is why, Lisa and I, we want to put it to the Serious Fraud Office to do the investigation. I believe that Len Brown needs to stand down and there needs to be a by-election. This is not okay. It's not.
Yeah, and certain so-called, you know, alternative media and whatnot should stop voting for Len Brown and giving his cronies promotion.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, in the so-called left, there are just so many phonies, eh? And, I mean, over the last couple of years, I've never been subjected to such defamatory filth in all my life, and I've been an activist since 1972, which is, you know, over 40 years now. So, you know, I've got a proven track record there. And what gets me is that people who come from nowhere, folks, do a bit of due diligence. You know, as soon as people come from nowhere and purport to be activists or purport to do this and that, just Google them. You know, if they've ever done anything of note... Well, surely to goodness, there'd be some record of it somewhere with the power of Google. Check it out. Because that's what we found out with the Occupy Auckland movement, which I was very involved in. There were a number of people who came from nowhere to Occupy Auckland and made a beeline. Anything to do with strategy or to do with the message or means of getting the message out, ding, 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 check them out. Because what happened was that... That Occupy Auckland was made dysfunctional by some very dodgy people who had no track record. And they seem to, yes, I'm talking about Suzette Marie Dawson as being one of them. And she seems to have vanished now. Linda Ann Wright is another one who's still very involved in so-called activist circles. And, I mean, I wouldn't touch either of them with a 40-foot barge pole. And if they want to take me for defamation, we'll fill your boots because I can, you know, I can prove why I'm saying what I'm saying.
Whoa.
Hello?
We're on break now, Penny.
Yeah, it's quite a hoot, eh, because...
Black sunrise, black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, cause we don't know. Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, cause we don't know. See the way.
welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's going to be raining and pouring truth on the awful scumbaggery agents of the freaking corporatocracy that runs this gosh dang planet right here, 5 days a week on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to make sure, of course, that everybody understands this is a listener-supported broadcast. The only reason the show is on the air is because of all the people that donate. This is their fault. It's not mine. Okay, I would wither and die away without your support, which reminds me, I desperately need a lot of support right now, specifically regular donations, because what we want to do is we want to move into a bigger house with a few extra rooms so that we can kit them out as radio and video studios so that I can invite activists into the studio proper and teach them how to do all of this radio thing. And do all of this video thing and actually know how to use the equipment, learn how to use the operating programs and stuff like that, and teach you the basics in a day. It's not that hard. You just do a radio show, then you do an interview, and then you edit them both, and you're done. You know? Then they'll possess the skills and the knowledge to be able to do it themselves, and they won't need me anymore. That way you've got a whole bunch of media savvy able to produce their own material content activists out there, which can amplify their own voices and won't be so reliant on the odd mention and soundbite horrible nature of the mainstream media coverage. God, I hate soundbites. I hate them so very, very much. They explain so little and yet give you a clear impression. It's really messed up, man. Don't let it happen, ladies and gentlemen. Please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Get in that bank account number there, the Kiwi Bank for Guerrilla Media. Start up an automatic payment. $5 a month, $10 a month. Got some people doing $50, $100 a month. You know, more is needed. The more I've got regularly coming in, the better rent I can pay because I want to have a nice place where we can actually host activists as well. If they're coming in from overseas, they've got to do video conferences or things like that. We'll have the facility where they can engage in interviews with people from all over the country, nice phone lines and the whole thing, and a room to stay in if they need it as well. You know, keep them comfortable because for Frank's sake, when you're traveling the world exposing scumbaggery, what you want, I think, rather, what you really would love and what you really need is somebody who's got available all the tools and the lodgings so that you don't really have to pay or travel or do a whole bunch of other crap that was rather unnecessary and expensive in the first place. And that's what I plan to do with the place that I'm living. You know, Sarah knows about this. We all figured it out. We've got to get out of wherever the heck we are now, but it's going to take a substantial cost in order to move from here to another place, not only initially where you'll need a couple of grand, but after that you'll also need maybe an extra $100 or $200 a week in order to cover the extra expenses on the second phone line and so on and so forth, so it'll all professional and legit. So, yeah, if you can, ladies and gentlemen, please, I've given activists coverage like nobody else ever in New Zealand history. It's no competition. Not by a long shot. And we do it every single day because it needs to be done and nobody else is doing it. So I think it's time to expand and do even more and make this little operation here a seed that will grow into a giant tree capable of producing many more seeds of its own. Go to that VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Please subscribe today. And there's our ad-free archives up on the top left there. If you just look around the little writing up at the top of the website, you'll see ad-free archives. So everybody who listens to the show, you don't like ads, you know, you don't really have to listen to them, okay? It's right there for you for free if you want. I just encourage you to donate if you be so kind, if you want to do that. So thank you. I just really wanted to get that out there. Now back to my very special guest, Penny Bright, who also would need a bit of funding. By chance, because I remember your last mayoral campaign, Penny, you got into a wee bit of debt before you before the day was out on that one. Do you need some donations as well?
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, as you know, neither of us, we do it for the money. And last time, it was my family that sort of bailed me out, and I still I still owe them about $5,000, but I mean, I'll get there eventually. But it shouldn't be like that. I mean, you know, those of us who run on the smell of an oily rag, yeah, we are very cost effective. And what I'm looking for, I mean, I'd really like a hand. I've got about $1,300 outstanding from the Merrill campaign, and I need at least $2,000 to get over to this anti-corruption conference in Sydney at the end of this month. And the reason why I really want to go to this conference is I went to the Australian Public Sector Conference in 2009, because when your keen is mustard, you're like blotting paper. You go and you listen at the workshops, you mix and mingle with the experts, you get their names, you get the hard copy literature to take away, and if you do your homework, you get your head around it. So back in 2009, that's when I learned about lobbyists and how you need a code of conduct for lobbyists and you need a register of lobbyists, neither of which we have in New Zealand. And I also learned about post-separation employment, which is the revolving door between public office in the private sector, and there should be a quarantine period of, say, 18 months to 2 years, because otherwise it's seen as people getting in public office just to feather their own nest. And a classic example of that, of course, is the former Minister of Justice and Commerce, Simon Power, who went straight from from being a minister to heading Westpac Private Bank with no quarantine period, and that's the bank the government uses. So that would be unlawful in Australia. But that's an example of this post-separation employment revolving door. So anyway, and it's a chance to actually, now that I was sort of the fourth highest polling mayoral candidate in Auckland, and I campaigned directly against corrupt corporate control, and they usually are very well attended by media, I can really help make a fuss. So anyway, folks, if 2,000 dollars is 100 people giving me $20. Now, how hard's that? So Kiwi Bank, PM, yeah, believe it or not, PM Bright. That's 3891007257190. That'd be a huge help.
And that's listed on your website, waterpressure.wordpress.com, isn't it, Penny?
That's a very good point.
If it's not, it freaking well should be.
That's exactly right. But if people have a look on my mayoral website, you'll get more up-to-date information on there. So that's www.pennybright4mayor.org.nz, and you can get up to date with the facts. Some of the facts that I'm giving you now, you will find up there. And so, yeah, I'll put a bit more information about there. About, you know, if people want to donate, that would be really lovely. Just a little bit. If a lot of people just give a little bit, and off we go. Fuss making on the smell of an oily rag.
Yeah, and also. The way that I've survived is because I've got a lot of real loyal listeners who've been listening to me for a long time and giving those regular contributions of a few dollars a month. It really, really helps if you set up an automatic payment. It takes a lot of the stress and pressure off, kind of thing. I encourage people to do that as well if you're donating to Penny.
Well, I mean, I'm just lucky enough to have a freehold house, so my sole income, I get $320 a week from flatmates, and if that was for a 40-hour week, that'd be $8 an hour. So I would love the living wage, $18.40. I wouldn't know myself. But anyway, I mean, so that's it. You know, very cheap to run. But I usually just ask. I sort of survive on that. But I just ask for when there's specific sort of things that come up. So just a bit of outstanding money from the mayoral campaign would be marvellous. I got 25 core flute screen printed signs, and that was a bit over $1,000. And someone loaned me $200 to stand, and I got a new stencil open the box, which cost about $100. So I need to just sort of get over the hump, because I've still got power bills and phone bills and all that. But as far as you're concerned, Vinny, I totally agree with the automatic payments, I'm not in quite a position to help myself right now. But I've always found
I had a really scary thought the other day. It's like a tithe it's like a tithe. It's like the Church of Truth, and you like you donate to your prophets kind of thing. Like, I don't know why I had that thought.
Well, I mean, in my view, you know, if people can help send me over to Australia, it's an investment in fighting corruption, because I can tell you right now that, that you'll get your money's worth. You will get your money's worth, because the thing is that I've managed to organise accommodation, really el cheapo there, and, I'm trying to get the cheapest possible flight. I want to get that booked in tomorrow, but then it's $2,000 registration. That's not cheap, but trust me, they're very well attended. There's probably at least 500 delegates there. And what I'm just trying to do is tell the truth that New Zealand, the corruption reality check is that we are not the least corrupt country in the world. We haven't even ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption because we don't have a legislative framework in place for openness, transparency and democratic accountability. It's all bollocks. I might not
Well, what did you expect in a monarchy?
And exactly. But anyway, so folks, if you've got a bit of money there, definitely give Vinny a hand, because the concept of people trying to be able to stand on their own two feet and do stuff. I mean, you know, like myself, I'm so useless in terms of like my mobile phone. I can't even take photos on my mobile phone. Give me a break. But I mean, I just wonder if I can do anything, really. I can do email. But, like, teaching people how to do this stuff, that's a brilliant idea, Vinny. Because, I mean, I'd like to have an opportunity to be able to hand-pick young ones coming through that have established a bit of a track record. I'm very happy to help give some tips on to how to be effective. Very, very. And older ones as well. But I'm not just opening it up to anybody. I'm quite fussy who I work with now. I'm interested in working with people with good hearts, good brains, guts, and a basic principle of natural justice. And, and I work on an issue-by-issue basis. Very happy to help.
So anyway... I think it's about education as well, because I think... Often there's no rule book or handbook or anything like that for the kind of stuff that we do as a penny. We're charting new territory the whole freaking time.
That's what so occurred to me when I was giving my little tribute to Vapi, just thinking, you know, she is going to leave a big hole in all. I mean, and there's others. I mean, there's the number of people, and it's sort of like you need to actually, rather than people at a funeral, try and think of how to summarise the key lessons and all that. Well, then, you know, maybe we need to make a big deal of 60th birthdays or something like that, and sort of have like a bit of a celebration and go through some of the stuff. Like, you know, this is some.
Well, how about we start up a website with all the archives to her previous radio shows, so that people can hear her voice for generations to come?
That's a good idea. But what occurred to me, what I reckon would really take off. Is some sort of show, whether it's radio, TV, or whatever, wisdom and common sense from effective people. You know, just as simple as that. You've got half an hour, the 10 biggest things in your life, your codes, the rules by which you live, what's worked for you, what do you want to pass on, you know, and just pick key people who you think have been effective in different areas. And it would be really interesting across the board spectrum to see what came up in common. Because common sense, you know, people keep saying it's not that common, but I can.
I've renamed it Platinum Sense because it's the rarest element on earth.
But you know, you can see what I'm saying. Eh? I reckon because so many people they buy those self-help books. You know, how can I be a better person? All that sort of stuff. Well, I reckon there'd be a lot of interest in that. I do.
Yeah.
Anyway. Just something to consider. But, before we all pop our clogs and it all goes down the Google, it's all...
Well, in fact, Penny, this is one of the ideas of Guerrilla Media as well, is that when we're teaching all the activists how to do all of this technical stuff, we'll be recording it as we're doing it. And so people will be able to actually watch videos of somebody being taught how to do all this and actually getting it done.
Well, right? We could have another go. I mean, we have a technical glitch with that workshop on effective banner making, because, we have another go at that one because I've learned a bit since then as well. But it's like, you know, just on the smell of an oily rag, how can you do it?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It doesn't matter. It's about doing what you can with what you got. Being creative and just getting out there, you know. Take a chance, man. Take a risk. What have you got to lose? You've got to lose your entire freaking country, but only if you do nothing. So get out there and freaking do something, or you're going to lose your country. And if you can't do something, then at least support the people who are doing it in your stead. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack.
Welcome back. We go everywhere on this show, man. And we were just talking about climate change just before. And I was, I remember I was saying on the other thing, it's like, what's his name? Al Gore has said that anybody who denies climate change is completely insane. And I actually tend to agree with him. If you deny that the climate changes, of course you're insane. I just deny that taxing all of humanity and exterminating the bulk of it and for the sake of human sustainability and enslaving everybody and taxing the very air they breathe isn't exactly a viable solution to climate change.
Indeed.
But I could be wrong. Maybe if you'd gambled it on the stock market and speculated on it on carbon futures or anything, it would make it all go away. Because that's all they plan to do about it.
Yeah.
And Al Gore owns one of these companies that sells the carbon credits too.
What I think the way to do it, Vinny, is to actually, through agenda, UN Agenda 21, I think it's Chapter 9 or Chapter 7 that deals with climate change. And once people understand that UN Agenda 21, they were specifically excluded from looking at the role of corporations, particularly multinationals. So when you have that perspective that, oh, people in the world, the planet, the mess, it's all your fault. You mustn't look at the ones really doing the damage, which are corporations. Well, how freaking bullshit is that? Give me a pipe.
I do believe that there is a lot of BS out there. And, you know, it's almost like the BS coming from the people who you know that are full of BS. That's fine because you expect it. It's when this BS coming from, you know, who, people you expected to be on your side or something like that or truth tellers, that's when it gets really kind of frustrating. Almost like righteous anger, I think.
Well, I mean, it's really handy because, well, sort of, you know, the Cold War's over, and so the idea that you've got to give the public something to be stirred up about. So it's like the state of the planet will unite everybody over the state of the planet, but we will, some through willful blindness and others from total ignorance, not looking at the role of corporations. Like, these are the ones that make the, you know, the munitions that help bomb, place and wreck it, they're the ones that control the industries that are major pollutants. Yeah, they control food, agriculture, fishing, whatever, and we're not allowed to look at them because that's prohibited from the UN Agenda 21. You mustn't look at the role of corporations or multinational companies. Give me a break.
Well, I think it's under a UN Agenda 21 that almost every single part of this control of the planet and the environment and the mandatory microchipping of everything. Basically, they say that corporations, what was it, public-private partnerships and that kind of thing will be the new government to a large degree. So naturally, they exempt themselves from any investigation, because otherwise the entire process would fall apart, which is incidentally the very reason why we need to be talking about this very, very regularly indeed, because Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius, and these other world syndication programs and plans are being implemented at a frightening rate with stunning efficiency. We're talking about a total domination of all human life, transport, housing, you name it, forever. That's what it actually means at the end of the day, and that will all be accomplished within the 21st century.
Well, anyway, well, what we need to do is continue to blow the whistle till our eyeballs bleed, as it were. But anyway, just before we go, so tomorrow, just to let folks know that in terms of being effective, it's really effective to use processes which are available. And the process which I'm availing myself of, as my fellow community activist Lisa Prager to an Auckland Council governing body meeting, which we will be attending in the Auckland Town Hall at 10 o'clock. And my subject matter will be the apparent lack of due diligence, failure to address the increased risk of money laundering in the Auckland Council's submission on the International Convention Centre Bill, as outlined in the following regulatory impact statement, which I read you a bit of before. Number two, the potential consequences of Auckland Council fails to uphold the rule of law regarding the statutory requirement under the Public Records Act 2005, which is to create and maintain full and accurate records of its affairs in accordance with normal, prudent business practice, including the records of any matter that is contracted out to an independent contractor. And that's one of the things...
Does that include Len Brown's affairs?
Does that include what, sorry?
Len Brown's affairs?
Well, the thing is, the books aren't open, and they're supposed to be. And the CEO, Doug Mackay, he is responsible, his statutory duty is to make sure there's, full accurate financial reporting. And so he doesn't do his job properly, in my view, and I've told him to his face, I don't think he's the duty. And he gets a bonus. Give me a break. Anyway, and the last point is, point number three, perceived conflicts of interest in the inquiry into the conduct of Marilyn Brown, i.e. the fact that Auckland Council CEO Doug Mackay, Ernst & Young and Nigel Morrison, CEO of Sky City, are all members of the unelected, very powerful private lobby group, the Committee for Auckland, who arguably are not unhappy with the performance of Marilyn Brown.
So I don't think his missus was unhappy with his performance either.
And the last point I'd like to make is that, just to let people know, now everyone, of course, has heard of Kim.com. And what people need to remember is that the very same Ofcams who've refused to lift a finger over the increased risk of money laundering at Sky City, they were the ones that got the assistance of the GCSB to unlawfully spy on Kim.com. And they were the ones that organised the raid on Kim.com's property where nearly 80 cops turned up. And one of the things he was charged with was money laundering. So I have sent a copy of this Official Information Act reply from Ofcams, Organised and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, to Kim.com to be passed on to his legal team, because I think it will be of assistance.
I think it would be. How exactly do you defend yourself from, what was it, a 73-page report of baseless accusations or something? How do you prove your innocence?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm not necessarily on the same page as Kim.com and everything, but he's done New Zealanders a huge favour through exposing that the GCSB unlawfully spied on him. I was one of 88 New Zealanders. Well, I was concerned that I might have been one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon. I followed the due process as outlined from the Office of the Prime Minister. I asked directly the GCSB, went around in a big fat circle, they couldn't confirm or deny, made a complaint to the Privacy Commissioner, they came back and basically said they'd heard from the GCSB, and of course it was unfortunate that I didn't know whatever the GCSB's been saying about me, but the Privacy Commissioner basically agreed with the GCSB that not confirming or denying was basically okay. Well, this is this whole Ahmed Zawi case all over again, the right to know what it is that you're supposed to have been, like, charged with, because I will argue with anybody anywhere that about factual accuracy of what I've said. And how can it be unlawful to tell the truth?
Here's how. When the people who legislate are the criminals.
Yeah.
That's how it becomes illegal to tell the truth, Penny. Is that they depend on their lies not being exposed in order to continue their freaking crimes.
Well, the last bit of good news for folks, and this is another really important thing, is the power of perseverance. Never ever drop the ball. And this, of course, is the news that John Banks, who the not so honourable John Banks, who was a New Zealand Minister for Small Business Regulatory Affairs, he now has been forced to stand down as a minister because he, the defendant Banks, is now facing trial in the district court for alleged electoral fraud. Another significant thing, which was never supposed to have happened, is that now the Solicitor General, the highest acting lawyer in the land, has now taken over the case, and he was requested to do that by both Brian McCready, the private prosecutor who's been successful in getting Banks in the court, and people like myself and Lisa Prager, who made complaints to the police. Two out of three of us, we were the ones who made the complaint to the police about the alleged electoral fraud, and of course the cops sort of picked up the ball and threw it away, and Graham McCready's picked up the ball and he's heading for the try line. So, but it seems that if you want to make a fuss in the court of law, you need to make a fuss in the court of public opinion. And again, full credit to my friend Jax. I don't know how many times her and I were out there with the banners. You know, the not so honourable John Banks had all the class of a rat with a gold tooth, and the famous morph of John Banks morphing into a rat with a gold tooth. And if people want to find out more about that, just check out www.dodgyjohnhasgone.com. Dodgyjohnhasgone.com, and you can get some of the latest information on that one. And but of course, John Banks, like a little cornered rat, he's trying to sort of come in sideways with a judicial review of this district court decision for him to be charged with electoral fraud, and that will be heard on the 27th of November in the High Court. But the Solicitor General is handling that one.
Is the Solicitor General or any of these other people also a Freemason, just like John Banks is? I wonder.
Well, the thing is this, in my view, is that although there's a lot of concern with some people about the role of the Solicitor General, I believe that it's a very straightforward case. And because the police, a lot of people are saying, well, how come a private prosecutor, an individual citizen, managed to get this a prime offence?
We've got about 20 seconds, Penny. Yeah, well, it is good. You know, you see successes exactly. And that kind of thing. I think we should... Yeah. Well, I think we should hype up our successes and kind of play down our failures sometimes, but admit them when it's necessary. We'll be right back tomorrow, I think, ladies and gentlemen. Catch you later.